This audio recording is of a Dublin Chelsea meeting in UCD in February 2010, just a few days after Fisherman Pat O'Donnell had been jailed. You'll find more information on Dublin Chelsea at www.dublins2s.com. This audio is of part two of the meeting. The speaker is Maura Harrington, and then there's three or four questions after she's spoken.
So now I'd like to introduce Maura Harrington, and Maura's been one of the most active spokespeople with the Chelsea. She's been acting with around the last 10 years around a broad range of issues, but Maura's going to talk about her experiences running the campaign and some issues affecting the community. So once Maura's speaking for 10-15 minutes, and then maybe we'll have a few questions and then we'll finish up. Is that okay? Great, thanks, Maura.
Yeah. First of all, apologies to Cleva, Andy and Amanda and to all of you here. Like anything in Gaza, I'm perfectly well without me. You're no place indispensable. But I was supposed to be here at 5 o'clock. And between traffic and the character of, I'm sorry, it took until now to get here. And I'm sorry I've missed the rest of the presentations and the questions. That said, even that alone was enough to reinforce, which it doesn't need anyway, why we need places like Erris. I mean, coming into the city with the car, you know, not quite what it should have been, and trying to come along by the canal and to get here. And I mean, this was just one evening, my friends, so it was under pressure to get here. But that whole level of living, which I think everybody needs a bit of R&R from us every now and then, most people do. And that's why Erris, which is where all this has started and continues, is a natural resource in its own right. It's the type of place where you come to for clean air, soil and water, sight of the night sky, sound of silence, fantastic beaches that, you know, you can just barely have your own private beach every now and then. It's that type of place, and it's so far removed in time and space, really, even though it's only 200 miles down the road. It really is a different country, and it's not populated by Luddites and 50s type farmers who were afraid of the electricity coming in. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the electricity coming in, and that Paul Williams, well, one of his many smears about Willie Cutoff's father, who objected to the electricity. He didn't. He would have, everybody at the time, rural electrification, people were entitled to be connected up to electricity. But because Willie's father's farm was further away, it was at the end of the estuary, the Rothercon. ESP wanted, he had signed up and agreed to it. Then they wanted to extract extra money out of him. And in those days, remember, nobody in the country had hard cash for anything. So it was a very different set of times, even though we might be coming back to it again. There was no cash, so he refused to pay extra money. And held out, and then he got his electricity. Eventually. Well, that's the type of thing. It's only a small story, but indicative of what's being said about us. The most cruel thing and questionable thing in the judge's remarks the last day to Pat O'Donnell, as he was being, as far as I'm concerned, politically imprisoned for 7 months, was to label him a thug and a boy. It's one thing, all of us, anybody in education or environment or anything else, you separate behaviour from the person. You don't label them. Behaviour at any one time might be deemed not quite what one would hope for. That's as it is, but you do not label people and have those words ringing in their ears when they're sent off to prison for 7 months, and sent off for the sole purpose of having Pat removed from the seat, which is where he's intended to be and intended to wear his labials. And interestingly, he's removed this year because Shell is going to do further work offshore. Now, they have announced today that they're postponing some of that so that the local community will be spared kind of the scenes of conflict or whatever that has been there, and to minimize risk to the community for this year. But the pipeline weren't to be imposed there in the first place and hadn't been attempted to be imposed, there would be no level of risk whatsoever, other than those of airplanes falling out of the sky and being hit by buses, which is what O'Keefe resorts to when he is faced with the actual hard questions arising from the World Banana Letter of November the 2nd. As Amanda said, we're entering our second decade of resistance to this proposed project. And I, at all times, continue to call it a proposed project, unlike those who, from the beginning, considered it a fait accompli. It was considered such by the oil companies, by the Fianna Fáil government and their various partners, since we're on our third government, by the way, since this began. We keep going. We equal castor pepper in American presidents, folks. It was considered just, you get in there, you show them a few pictures of pipeline trench being backfilled in lovely healthy English countryside, you know, the hedgerows reinstated, and then you'll be in and out before the bog trotters know what you're on about. And that didn't happen. And I will say that from the beginning, it's a testament to the local people there, all of us who laboriously read through all the bump that you were presented with. And remember, we were coming at it from a position of knowing absolutely nothing about anything to do with pipelines. And the last day I was before the judge who sentenced Pat, it was the day after Pat had been sentenced, I described myself quite deliberately as a specialist. And neither the judge nor the state solicitor questioned that description, so it stands, and this was reported in the paper of record the following day. And to have reached, it has taken 10 years and it has taken all sorts of stuff in between, but we are the specialists. I can speak for myself now and say I'm an accepted one. It has not been challenged by the court, by the state, or in the paper of record through clarification or correction. And I'm not alone in that, because we are the people who have lived with it just this side of obsession for the past 10 years, and we are the people who know the minutiae of it inside out. And of course the planning process is designed to in such a way that at the beginning we made the mistake of trying to tell people all those little easy bits of things that we knew and not very few other people really had very much interest in them, and the eyes would start to glaze over. And it's designed that way so that you had to go through the planning process and digest all of this bump in EISs, and as they produced more of them they got bigger, and with anything with less actual hard information on them. But of course that, as far as I'm concerned, is designed to exhaust people. After having gone through line after line and discovered even that they couldn't even cut and paste competently, They had two place names in the EIS. Never forget them, Arvon and Bout. And if you come into where I was looking for them, you'll be there for quite some time. It's cut and paste stuff. You know, and that was the standard of competence and efficiency that had been applied to the thing from the beginning. And at this stage, nobody in their right minds, knowing what we do, and having met the people whom we have met from fence line communities globally, who live beside Shell, nobody in their right minds would want what Shell is trying to impose on us. And that is the local side of it. It's a question of the people who are informed and who continue to oppose the imposition of the thing know what we're talking about. And what's more, we have more respect for ourselves and respect for our place. My own tenet has always been the primacy of place. That place comes first. Because place was there before us, place is what we will hand on to those who come after us. And that, at the beginning of the 21st century, principally means having a safe, clean supply of drinking water. Now, what Shell are trying to do, and have been trying to do, directly threatens the one source of our regional water supply, the Shallow Lake, Kerrimore Lake, upon which 10 to 11,000 people in the Barrow near Barrows depend. And even already, a gallon of water costs more than a gallon of oil. So where we are in Erith is in the vanguard of one of the first resource wars of the 21st century. And the fact that we have survived for the past 10 years, we were there for 5 years as a group with no name, and then eventually we did have to call ourselves something. So in February 2005, the name Shell City was coined. And one of the people who was there that night, that person was John O'Donoghue of Annam Cara, and lots more. But his presence was there, and hopefully it continues with us. But once we have shown up as a sparsely populated, largely ignored area. We were ignored both colonially, because we were too far away for anybody to bother really getting to us. That's what that intended. But we were then ignored by the first the Free State and then the so-called Republic. Because when heavy industry, which equates with dirty industry, certainly in the middle of the last century, when that could have been made available to us to prevent, or to prevent at some measure, the immigration which the place suffers, it wasn't there because there weren't enough, it was considered there weren't enough voters there to make a political difference. So where everybody else comes into this, even yet, I'd say if everybody in Erith voted for the same person, which has the same chance as your snowball, there still wouldn't be enough to elect one representative. And the support that Jerry Cowley gave to the Boswell 5 at the time, and which is subsequently spun at, oh, when he was deserted by Genesee, he didn't get re-elected, he didn't get all the votes in Boswell that would elect him. He could be voting yes if they wouldn't have enough votes to elect anybody. He was deliberately targeted by Dara Cleary in Ballina, and Jerry Cowley lost 2,000 votes in Ballina. And it had absolutely nothing whatsoever, except perhaps tangentially, but very tangentially, to do weight loss. So he was taken out by Fianna Fáil, and their man, Dara Cleary, who came from being in the head office of the Chambers of Commerce here in Dublin, down to see to the needs of big business in Mayo. The other side, the Tweedledum, Tweedledee, that's the Philograve side, as far as we're concerned, and as far as this issue of natural resources is concerned, there's absolutely no difference between them. And I heard some discussion there, was like, what to do. The sovereign power in this country is with the people. Now, people are going to go out, I'm sure, next election round, and they will vote for so-and-so because he or she is a very nice person, and actually they're grand, and I know them, and they've gone to 4 weddings and a funeral, or 4 funerals and a wedding. And nobody, or very few people, seem to ask, what are you going to do when the whip cracks in Leinster House? Now, it's a question for all of us, and all of it is, it's all part of a whole. And the whole story, as we have shown up over the past 10 years and continue to show up, is that this is one rotten state. We are a living tribunal down in North Mayo. We have books and files and stacks of stuff in all our own houses. And the stuff for a tribunal is there. I wouldn't be looking for a tribunal because in 20 years' time, people will have forgotten what it was about in the first place. The time to address the issue of our natural resources is the here and now. And that's what we're continuing to do. And we will continue to do it any which way it takes. And the more people who hear about it, that's what will make the difference. I mean, when you see the... Sorry, I'll stop. You have mainstream media, which just focuses and has a great kind of a flurry over one particular small issue. Well, not small in this, today's case, which is Willie O'Dea, and writing affidavits about the rest of it. We've one of them too, by the way, in the boxes of the tribunal material, where a senior official from the then Department of the Marine, the equivalent of Ryan's one now, stated in court that all consents were in place. That remains to be adjudicated on by this Justice McCoy 5 years on. But you have sound and fury over Willie O'Dea's affidavit. And the Greens are making all sorts of twittery green noises, whatever happens. It is the two Greens in government, Gormley and Ryan, who either allowed themselves or were daft enough to be the two ministers with responsibility for Corrib at the moment. Now, they're fairly gullible, certainly those two, and then they become desperate. But Ryan, even though he's not one of the power brokers, but he is in his capacity as minister at the moment, in that he could call a halt to the thing in the morning. There have been so many infringements by the other side, by Shell and their agents, of actual laws. And there is one outstanding at the moment, whereby, following the Bord Pleanála letter, there are emplacements by Shell above the high water mark at Broadhaven Bay at Linghead. And there is a very questionable legal status over what Shell have placed above the high water mark onto the land, which is one of the reasons, I believe, why it's announced in today's Times that they're giving the natives a rest this year so that the nasties won't be coming in on top of them from outside, as if the people who live there, they never learn. The arrogance implicit in that statement of Shell's today is the same as what pertained 10 years ago. The people living there are pawns, they really don't count. We call them the movers and shakers. But the movers and shakers haven't moved us for the past 10 years, and it's up to everybody to ensure that it doesn't happen for the next 10, and that the resources of the country, which, remember, we as the people down there and those who have come to support us, we have held them for the past 7 years, because that gas was supposed to flow at the end of 2003. It would be halfway through its life by now. Granted, there wasn't what in the rest as well, it started on that. It shouldn't get any. But the thing is, we have held it. And we held it through the Tiger years, when everybody thought they had loads of money. Now everybody knows that very few pay about money. And now is the time to start a proper debate about regaining control and management of our resources for the good of ourselves, so that they can be used as a transition fuel from fossil to the alternatives. And interestingly, I just finish on this, sorry, Ryan has picked up on this, and we must have Corrib. There's an interesting video which you can Google. If you Google Declan Murphy and one of these institutes here in Dublin, it's called the Dublin Institute, it's an EIIA or something. Declan Murphy and the Ecological Institute, so some Google them and you'll find it. But there's a video of a talk he gave recently. He was the guy who was on Pat Kenny at the end of January. And again saying, nothing wrong with the pipeline. Perfectly safe. He went on to give this talk. And the essence of that talk was, really, were the people within this room, whatever room he was in, are the people who know. And really, the people outside are getting mixed messages, and they don't really know what's best for them. It would be instructive. I'd get the link and put it up on the website to have a look and a listen to that, because that is the attitude which still prevails. And it's like, well, we must have cover to get the nice, clean, green space where everything will be swimmingly sweet and green for Ryan and Gormley. But they are not going to get it on our backs and by destroying what we have. And that's what we have been fighting for and what we continue to fight for. Thanks.
Great, so we'll just take a quickly run out of time here. So we'll take a few questions. Okay, so Owen, and then
I just make a quick comment. I'm from the Rossport Solidarity Camp, and we're based down in Mayo, Oldtown. We have a house that was given to us by a local, and that's where we're living. So it's basically just to invite anybody who wants to come down and see the area to contact us, and during the summer we'll be setting up a camp, and the June bank holiday weekend is the usual gathering weekend. So just if people want to come out, like, obviously it's great, people have to walk close to where they are, but it's great to actually see what it's all about, to talk to the local people involved. So the June bank holiday weekend, there's going to be a cycle coming from Wales, there's a community over in Wales that are fighting an open cast coal mine, and it's trying to join up community struggles, hopefully a few others in Ireland and that. So just basically to invite to say that we're there, and anyone who wants to come down, they're more than welcome.
Great, thanks, Omar.
Just what Mara said about that group, they set themselves up as the ecological group. I've discovered that group is sponsored or funded by both Shell, Statoil, and Rail Cars.
Some ecological
institutions. Total spoofers. And just on another point as well about the. Unfortunately, in the world we live in, it's run by the markets and big corporations, and that's what I keep my eye on via whatever, Bloomberg or anything. And the situation is Shell have badly misjudged what they've done in Mayo, because if they had played ball and refined the gas properly, as Morris said, half that gas would have flowed during the peak oil prices and peak gas prices. We're now in a situation where we big worldwide recession. The IEA, I think it's the International Energy Association, they have said that energy use in the Western world has peaked. Since then, during the peak oil prices, oil companies went mad prospecting. They've discovered vast deposits all around the world, whether it be the Falklands. There's been huge deposits found off Brazil, Qatar, and they've discovered the North Sea has a lot more gas than they thought. There's been huge, huge finds now in the last 5 years all around the world. And prospecting is based, the intensity of prospecting is based on the current price of oil and gas. So during the 80s and 90s, the price of oil was quite low. So in many ways, they're happy to sit on the established finds in the North Sea and that. They weren't that bothered about Ireland and that. But then, when prices started to rise from the start of the millennium, that's when they became interested in places like Ireland or the Amazon rainforest and that. So that's, you have to view this. So I think, and if you look at, I was looking at Shell's latest business reports and that, Shell are not having a good time, but they're cutting staff. They've slightly panicked over this biofuel thing as well, and that they've committed themselves to an investment with the Brazilian government for $10 billion, and with the sugarcane refinery, biofuels, that kind of thing. And I think they know the game is up for kind of a carbon intensive world. And as I said, in the latest, with their new chief executive, Vassar, in their latest business, and there's actually no mention of carbon gas, which would explain why things have suddenly gone kind of quiet in Mayo. Over. So,
thank you very much. Okay, we'll take one more question. Another question?
Just one more. Is activity continuing in the refinery in terms of the building, or has there was rumours that staff were being let go? What's the situation on that?
Yeah, well, there's certainly Ireland's 800 working there at the moment. You see, again, it's nearly impossible. So every now and then we do a head count going in, but the numbers would have reduced. For the simple reason that you can't keep building the one refinery forever. The idea was, of course, that they're 400 acres, that they would keep building more and more. But they started building that when the state moved against us in October 06. So it's more or less as built as it's going to be. And just on one point of information on that, and I won't go on and on, but even some of the numbers that were given at the height of the largest construction site in Ireland, how that was being managed with an awful lot of the local people who were there in kind of frontline security, so the real security was behind them. The local people who were employed, and since Shell speaks in percentage terms, this would be a very small percentage of the population. But they would work there for 3 days a week, and they'd sign on for the other three. Then another lot would come along and work for the other 3 days, having signed on for the first 3 days. So not alone were we, it was the state handing over the gas to them. Not alone had the state built the pipeline from Crockwell up to Balnaboy before ever planning permission was, it was announced before planning permission was looked for. But they were actually facilitating them bumping up their numbers by using the split week thing where they had 3 days working and 3 days signing on. So that, Michelle, is by no means a generous corporate entity. And when people are past their use date, then they get dispatched with fairly fast. So it's going to have to wind down. The only possibility, I would hope, for further work at the Balnaboy refinery would be in dismantling.
Thanks, Mara. Okay, so I think we'll finish it there. I just want to say thank you very much to your speakers, Mara, from the whole way from Mayo today, for Kiva, and for Andy. I'd like to say thank you to the Socialist Party of Society for hosting this meeting. On our behalf, to everybody in Dublin Shelter City for all the work we've done in publicising parents' meeting, and to the Frank Ryan Society for the help also in organising this meeting.
This audio recording is of a Dublin Shelter City meeting in UCD in February 2010, just a few days after Fishel and Pat O'Donnell had been jailed. You'll find more information on Dublin Shelter City at www.dublins2s.com. The audio recording was made and edited by Andrew Flood. You'll find more audio recordings of mine at anarchism.pageabode.com.